from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G Scott and Ursula Royteam.
Good morning, happy Wednesday, and thank you for listening to the G and Ursula Show. It's the 10 o'clock hour, so at 10:47, we have scenarios, and then at 10:30, I'll tell you why this generation of kids should go into law enforcement, and Ursula will share why they shouldn't go into radio.
Well, come on. Now.
Okay, I'm not saying that.
And I also
say my kids shouldn't.
And I just want to say that the State Roofing text line 98973 has been the most on fire it's ever been since I have been doing radio. The block button is real serious today. But right now, let's get back to the show.
We don't need no education.
Okay, so G, we have been discussing college for the last week. We've been talking about what is broken, how it should be fixed, especially as this pandemic is tearing across our country. And quite frankly, I think college is way too expensive. It's just becoming worse and worse and more of a burden for families.
It's changing.
Unattainable for too many students, especially students of color. And for middle-income families, even more today, it means taking on an enormous amount of debt. You have even harsher words about the college system.
It's a scam.
What do you mean by that?
It's a scam, especially a lot of the higher-up situations where you're asking families to pay $30,000-$40,000 a year to, quote, get an education, when a lot of that time that you're spent in school, or you're probably taking classes that have nothing to do with your degree. Why does it take 4 years to get to that degree when usually it's your last 2 years of college where you're having those classes be focused towards that degree? All I'm saying is if this education is worth $45,000 and this other education over here is worth $7,500, there is a big problem with our society. And the fact that there are a lot of people who don't have access to this education because of being so much money, it's just such a loaded question. But I will say this. I am so glad that we are now having this conversation about what's going on with these colleges and universities. And whether you agree with me or not, that's fine. I'm just glad we're talking about it. And I'm just glad places like Washington State took back their whole thing of making families pay the $13,000 that they were going to make them pay if they signed the paperwork.
And in fact, we are going to get to that update because, you know, just earlier in the week on Monday, we spoke with my friend Debbie, whose freshman student was going to have to sign up for the dorms for the year and the food program, which is a requirement at Wazoo. But what if, you know, the school has to be canceled or people have to study from home? Mm-hmm. They were going to be out all that money. She said it was about $13,000. And they were going to make the student sign that and say, hey, you got to sign it and you might not get your money back. Well, they did change that. They did reverse that. So kudos to WSU for listening to the students and the parents and then making a different decision.
Why do you think they reversed that so fast? I mean, less than 24 hours. Why do you think they did that?
Because they heard there was an onslaught. There was a petition. I think that they probably realized maybe legally they wouldn't be able to get away with it, because I had talked to a couple of attorneys who said that they might not have the legal basis to do that, especially given that we are in the middle of a national emergency. But I would like to think that WSU just did the right thing.
Go to trade school.
You know what? And that you bring up a good point, too. For a lot of people, I mean, maybe trade schools are going to come back in fashion.
They need to.
Because you can make a great living doing a profession that does not require this traditional four-year education. But a couple of months ago, we spoke with someone who has been advocating for higher education reform, and we wanted to bring him back on because we had such a heated conversation yesterday. His name is Dr. Todd Rose. He is the co-founder of the think tank Populous and the former director of the Mind, Brain, and Education program at Harvard. Good morning, Todd. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. It's great to be back with you.
Thank you. With that kind of intro, huh? You might want to refute some of the things that we're saying, but let's just start off with this, because you heard what we said about what happened with WSU. And the last time you spoke with us, you said parents and students have a lot more leverage right now. Do you still feel that is the case?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I hate to tell you, like, you're spot on in the conversations you're having, right? The issues with higher ed right now are not COVID related. These issues of cost, access, and opportunity were there for years and years. This just accelerated the reckoning that had to happen.
You're speaking, you're singing, you're... Okay,
the coronavirus attacks underlying issues. Here's my question for you, Todd. Thanks again for joining us again. Right now, there are a lot of parents and families across the nation that are in a holding pattern. They're waiting to see if their son or daughter is going to be going to campus to go to school, or if they're going to be at home again with mom and dad taking online classes. My question to you is this. Can families use this as leverage by telling universities, I am not going to pay full price? Talk about that.
Yeah, in fact, if we're not willing to push on this right now, we will continue to get the old system for, I don't know when we'll have another chance like this. And look, universities are in a tough spot, and they're not all behaving badly, but a lot of them are. And I'll just say, like, my think tank, we just finished a big study that's going to come out next week looking at the American public's priorities. What do they want from higher education? And let me just tell you, you're not going to be surprised to hear it's about cost. It's just way too expensive. They want more access. They're sick of the selectivity garbage, right? They keep being sold rankings on U.S. News and World Report. The public doesn't care. They just want more access for more people, and they want a good job they enjoy at the end of the day. Like, and so meanwhile, we're being sold better sports teams, you know, selectivity. Like, this is what the public wants. It cuts across all demographics, race, gender, income. So if we're not willing to draw a line in the sand and say, start solving our problems, then we can't be upset with what we get down the road.
Todd, I want to talk, first of all, I almost fell off my seat because I have been complaining about that whole U.S. News World Report rankings business and how that is a racket. I mean, and the way schools try to change their selectivity by rejecting a high number of students so they can say only 5% got into Stanford, that kind of thing. And that whole thing just drives me nuts. But I want to ask you, you said schools are behaving badly, not all of them, but some. What do you mean by that?
I mean that I believe that they are not holding up their end of the social contract, right? Especially, I mean, universities, we talk about them being the gatekeeper of opportunity, which they shouldn't be, but that they somehow advance the social, educational, and occupational mission of the country. But the truth is that in our recent survey, two-thirds of the American public said that higher education institutions serve their own interests only. I mean, we're in big trouble when two-thirds of the country don't believe the higher education institutions serve their interests. And so to me, when I know for sure that the top priority of the majority of the American public across all demographics is bring this cost down, and when I start seeing university presidents, the first thing they say on TV is, well, obviously we can't reduce tuition. What do you mean, obviously? That's not true. You're telling me Zoom classes cost as much as in-person? It's not true.
Hey, Todd. Oh, go ahead, Ursula.
I was just going to say, okay, Todd, just there's so much I need to get out right now. Okay, wait, Todd. So Zoom classes, someone tried to argue with me, and someone I love, by the way, but said, well, online classes are actually more expensive for colleges. Is that true?
It's absolutely not true. It's true if you had an old archaic business model that cost $60,000 a student, and now you're scrambling to try to put stuff online. But you look at a place, one of my favorite places, like Southern New Hampshire University. I mean, they have College for America. It's mastery-based online. It is like something like $3,000 a term. And by the way, that's a school that immediately waived all tuition for incoming students this year, for first year. You know, so it's just not true. And, like, look, I wish every university Well, I wish they'd thrive. I wish they'd add to the social contract. But the truth is if they're unwilling to serve the public's needs, then they don't deserve to be in business.
I spoke with my old roommate from military school last night, actually, and his wife is a college professor at Michigan State University. And I heard out of her own mouth, even she says, I can't properly do good teaching for my students online on the computer. I want to ask you this. I got my notes out right now, Todd, and I'm writing it down. And let's just say I'm getting ready to pay $30,000 for my child to go to school next season. I'm actually talking for my friend. But anyways, I'm getting ready to pay $30,000. What should I do? What should I say to the university? What should I write out to the university? How much money should I ask off for my tuition if my child potentially is going to be doing classes online?
So what I would say is that rather than come in with a firm number, I would put the ball on their court. I would say that obviously this is not the experience that we were sold, right? So I want to know what the contingency plans are. I want to understand what it is I'm getting, what I may get if things, you know, go sideways, and what does that mean for what you're going to charge me? And they're just different universities will have different capabilities, but the thing that really drives me crazy, and I don't mean to like, you know, but too fine a point on it, is it's one thing if like, you know, a small state school with very, very limited means is like, we really are struggling to bring costs down right now. But when you have universities like Harvard and Princeton, Stanford, some of them have endowments bigger than some countries' GDPs, and they're not reducing tuition. Like, it tells you all you need to know about how they see themselves and how they see us.
And Todd, thank you so much for bringing up the endowments, because that is another argument that I have. So I say, well, many of these schools have endowments that, you know, in part are not restricted funds. Why aren't they tapping into those?
Because they don't think they have to. Because they think we'll continue to pay more and more for the privilege of attending. And the thing is I think that they are not recognizing the pretty dramatic change that's happened with respect to public attitudes and priorities. And at the end of the day, we have a lot of leverage right now, right? Parents can decide to wait. Students can. But think about this. Most of these places think they're going to get bailed out. That is the hidden agenda, right? Mm-hmm. Well, in our research, we just found out that a majority of the public is against that, right? So that's not even clear that will happen. But let's just even go further. Let's say they're unwilling to start addressing our priorities like cost, access, opportunity. Then we have to have a different conversation, which is, why are they tax exempt? Right? Like, we give tax exempt status so they don't pay property tax, they don't pay these things, because they're supposed to serve public interest. And if they're unwilling to do it when they know darn well what our interests are, then we should at least have that conversation about whether it's worth subsidizing.
I got to ask you one other thing, though. I mean, this is all music to our ears, but you know this is not an easy sell. And there are still so many businesses we've been discussing this week that a college degree is a basic requirement before you can even get in the door. So you can reform colleges, but you still also have to reform the mindset of many companies that still require.
This is great.
Right?
You're 100% right. And so here's the thing. We've got a project. I can't say too much about it right now, but like exactly to your point, which is, you know, you would not believe the number of CEOs who have told me privately they know the diploma at best is a fuzzy signal and probably really isn't telling them what they need to know. And what we found is that there's like two reasons why they stick with it. One is they get worried about being sued. Right? But, hey, at least we based on our diploma, we didn't discriminate in any way, whatever. The second is they don't know what else to use. So we've got a project where we're starting to shift this away into more performance-based hiring, right? Show me you know how to do the work. I don't care what your credential is. And so there's some cool work there. And then getting companies to just start saying out loud, like, even if you don't know what else to do yet, tell the public the truth, that you know as well as we know that these diplomas aren't really worth what we've been telling everybody they're worth. And as we get people to at least commit to moving to a different direction, I think that will open the floodgates for parents to start making different decisions, like trade schools, right? The real bang for the buck that allows you to get the kind of job you want and live the life you want to live.
Whoa. Really appreciate those words there, Todd. Before you get going, I want to, again, for some reason, I want to bring this up going forward. Do you think trade schools, again, I want to bring that up again because this is very important because I really love the idea of trade schools. Do you think that's going to really come back strong during and after this pandemic?
I do, actually. And I can tell you, again, from our research that the appetite and interest in what we've normally called non-traditional models, like trade school, like micro-credentialing, far exceeds the interest in the traditional four-year model. And what we have to be really clear on, and employers can play this role, and certainly is that the big danger right now is a majority of the American public views that very positively, right? What a great bang for the buck. The problem is they actually believe that most Americans really care about the high-status U.S. News and World Report. And for your listeners, here's the truth. They don't, right? Your private view is correct, and it is what the majority of Americans think. So if we can get past thinking that we're keeping up with the Joneses and realize the Joneses don't even want what the Joneses want, like, we can actually get somewhere pretty great. And the truth is that not all these universities are going to survive. But look, they're smart, right? They'll figure it out. And they'll adapt, and as long as they start to serve our needs, again, cost, access, opportunity, like when they start orienting toward that, they can start to serve the role for us that they're supposed to play, right? And they can be part of advancing the American dream for more and more people.
That's Dr. Todd Rose on the current state of college right now during this COVID-19 pandemic. Before Ursula, you had one more thing?
No, I just want to say thank you.
Oh.
Honestly, and it's too late for me, pretty much. I was one of those, you know, just even in the last 5 months, I have learned so much. And, you know, I am one of those parents that's paid a lot of money. And even my own son, my oldest son who has graduated, and he's benefiting from a great college education. But he said, you know, for my kids, I don't know that I would fight so hard to go to one of these elite schools. And I think, you know, if we can help people moving forward, it's awesome. And thank you so much, Todd, for your information.
Hey, Todd, before you
my
go, I want to know.
You're having the right conversation, so keep it up.
Do universities and colleges invite you for dinner these days, Todd?
The good ones, you know, look, the Arizona State University is doing amazing things, Southern New Hampshire University, Western Governors. There's plenty of schools that they know where this is going, and they would love to get out from underneath this status obsession. And so as long as we focus on that, and this is not an anti-college thing, you know, this is about the American public, about kids getting to be able to connect to the life they want to live. And let's really put the pressure on higher education to serve a positive role for us.
Thanks, Todd. Appreciate you, brother.
Thank you.
1047, we do scenarios. Coming up next, we get personal a little bit, and we talk about footsteps. I talk about career in law enforcement. Ursula talks about career in radio. Where do we stand on that? We have that conversation next. It's Gene Ursula.
Thank you so much for making the G and Ursula Show part of your morning routine. Still ahead, we will be solving other people's problems in scenarios, as we always do around 10:47 in the morning. But before we jump into our next discussion, I want to say that last one, G, with Dr. Todd Rose from Harvard's Graduate School of Education, that may have been one of the best we've had since the start of the show. I could hear you jumping around.
What do you mean, hear me? I sent you guys a video.
I haven't had a chance to see it because we're in the middle of a show, but I could hear you.
I was dancing. Hey, have you? Okay, when you were a kid and your mama or your daddy, somebody made some good food for you, did you ever get up from the table and start dancing because it was so good?
Yes.
Or was it just me? I know I used to do it all the time. When the food is good, well, that was me during that interview. Okay, Todd. Okay.
I could hear you.
Okay. It was so good. I put a Twitter poll on Twitter right now. And the question is this. When paying for college, you're paying for status or an education? Right now, status is winning 74% to 26%.
Ooh, wow.
Can I bring up one point about college and the cost? That's just insane in our country. How come I could write up a business plan right now and not go out and not get a loan for $10,000 to start a business, but you can go out and get a $150,000 loan when your business plan is an English degree?
Okay.
It's insane.
Okay, hold it, though. Okay, my mind has changed a lot in the last 5 months. I will say I still value a college education or any education. And I have learned so much. And that discussion was something that cemented some of the things that I have been just learning along the way. And like I said, okay, if you missed our last segment, please, we will have it on our podcast, and we will also put it on the G and Ursula Show Facebook page, because you need to listen to it if you have someone who's going to be heading into college, or someone who is maybe a loved one who eventually wants to have kids in the future, or if you yourself are going to be heading into college. It's just an important thing to listen to, because it may change your mind about a lot of things. Speaking of changing your mind. Mm-hmm. There is this new survey out, and it was done with 10,000 police officers, and they over 80% of them said they would not recommend that their child follow their footsteps into law enforcement. Only 7.5% said they would. 12.3% were still undecided. And it got us to thinking, like, what advice would you give your kids about careers and whether they should follow in your footsteps or whether they should follow in your dad's footsteps?
I want Zion, my youngest, to work closely with the public. That's his calling. Whether it's to be a police officer, whether it's going to be in politics, I would rather him stay away from politics, because I think you might have a great heart when you start in politics, but we all know that money changes the heart. You know what I mean? So I kind of stick away from that. I would love for him to go into law enforcement. Ursula, law enforcement, I encourage everyone, every youngster that's listening right now, go into law enforcement. It's something that I wanted to do my entire life. You saw the picture on the G and Ursula Facebook page. I posted a picture of the badge that I used to wear as a kid, the little gold badge. It's a picture of me, my dad, and my sister sitting there. So, yes. Yes, yes. I encourage youngsters to go into law enforcement. You are needed.
What about broadcasting, what we do for a living?
I think Baby G, the oldest, will go into that. I think my oldest son will go into that. I could tell.
Yeah, he's very comfortable in front of a camera or in front of a microphone.
Yeah, he's going to be the one that's going to go into broadcasting, and he's going to be 10 times better than his dad. Probably 100 times better than his dad. And that's just, he'll do that. He's going to slide right into there like somebody slid into somebody's DMs.
Okay. Okay. Would you not throw those things in when I'm going to try to.
Okay.
Okay. So the chef was asking, you know, would you recommend someone go into broadcasting? I did not necessarily discourage my sons from going into broadcasting. But anyone, they made the decision on their own. I mean, they saw the kind of crazy hours I would work. I mean, when they were young, especially when I was managing the newsroom, I would be gone a lot, you know, and they saw, you know, how you have to be tied to the newsroom at all times. And it just didn't seem appealing to them, even though my oldest did do one of his big projects in school about Cairo Radio. And that was very sweet. But that was the last bit of interest that he showed in my career, other than being supportive. But I will say this. I tell people, because I mentor a lot of young people, and I will say, if you are really, really, really determined to do it, then I would say yes. And if you are willing to, you know, work crazy hours, maybe not a lot of pay in the beginning, and you're not doing it purely to be seen on TV or to be heard on the radio, but because you have a true calling for telling stories or, you know, making an impact, because this is not an easy job, and it's been even tougher now. And you know, we're probably below the level of used car salespeople or whatever. And that's not to, you know what I mean? But there are so many people who like to rip on journalists right now that we need people who are truly dedicated and who are willing to put in those tough hours and put in the tough work, and maybe not for the glamour and the glory, but because they love it. And when I find those people, and I used to run our internship program, and I love mentoring anybody who's interested in the field, I will do everything I can to help them succeed, but you got to really want it.
Yeah, you got to.
You can't just do it for the glory.
But you know what? You got to really want anything in life. Like, you got to really want anything.
That's
whatever
true.
It is that you want to do, you got to really want it. Like, you can't do it because your mama wants you to do it, or your significant other wants you to do it, or some of your friends think you should do it. No, you have to want to do it, because the truth never expires, and what's real comes out. And if you're not into it, you're not going to be good at it. It's just that. You're not going to be good at it. And so sometimes you guys might listen to the G and Ursula show, and then some days you're like, oh, man, they're depressing and stuff like that. But that's fine, because the one thing that let me speak for myself. The one thing that I'm not good at, I am a terrible actor. Hence the reason why I didn't go into acting. I'm not very good at it. But I tell you what I can do. I can tell you exactly how I feel and what I think. I'm really good at that and have no problem expressing those things. So if you don't have a problem with that, then I'd say you should go into broadcasting. But I want one little tidbit. Those that are journalists, I just want to say I have an admiration for you. I think you guys are like the reason why our society really gets the news, because the work that you guys do for a story, some of the biggest stories that nobody was supposed to find out about, have been because of the journalists in our country.
And that is absolutely the truth. And for those of you who are listening, who are interested in this kind of career, there is still the ability to make a good career of it. And we do need you. And we do need people who want to tell the truth, who are not going to fall into this divisiveness that we are dealing with right now, but you want to seek the truth, we absolutely need you.
Okay, my poll on Twitter, somebody must have been listening because they got on there. It's rocking right now. When paying for college, you're paying for status or an education. 51% status, 49% education.
There
so it's
go.
Going negative. Hey, coming up next, we do scenarios. It's the G and Ursula Show. Gene Ursula Show, everybody. Happy Wednesday. Ursula, I'm only on one cup of coffee, and I'm in a great mood because I had some people reach out to me. You want to know what they said?
What?
They said, gee, I still dance when I have good food. I said, ooh, I thought it was just me.
Okay, and I just watched your video. Please, I beg you, please put it on our Facebook page.
No! Why is it so people can see me that I was dancing during an interview?
Yes,
then people are going to complain. They're going to be like, see, that's why you don't listen to the G and Ursula Show. G Scott is dancing while doing an interview. Well, you know what?
No.
If somebody's saying some good stuff, I get.
Oh, 99% of the people will think it's awesome.
Well, let's see. Plus, I need a haircut too. All right, let's get to scenarios, buddy.
Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo.
Dear G and Ursula, ooh, this is a long one. I had something on my mind that has been an extra bother since this pandemic has began. I haven't had the unfortunate luck of getting some very rude and mean neighbors. They have done many things to irritate me and stress me out, and it has been so bad that I've had to call the police multiple times. From what I know about the terms of the lease at my apartment complex, I know that they are breaking that. However, my neighbors are friends with the landlord, so he did hardly anything to get my neighbors to leave me alone. Only recently was I able to finally get them to leave me alone because I was able to talk about my grievances to my landlord's bosses. Unfortunately, they got back to me and said that my neighbors will not be evicted. I understand that evictions are illegal at this time, but I believe this expires on August 4th. I feel like I'm having to play games and fight for things, something as simple as peace and quiet and some sanity. They're pounding on the ceiling. It's just not excusable. I do not appreciate this at all, and I don't understand why my landlord's boss cannot see how stressful my neighbors have made my life. I do not understand why the boss wants me to move out, not eviction, but won't cost me money to break my lease early. Why are these people allowed to play games with something as important as my well-being? My neighbors have made my life hell for 10 months, and this pandemic has made it even worse because they are at home more and more and able to abuse me more. I do not know what to do. I emailed the boss and told them that I was not happy with the decision. I am not sure what I can do beyond that. I need your help. State Roofing text line 989-73. Ursula, you're up to bat first, buddy.
Wow. So she's already talked to the boss's boss,
right,
and they cannot be evicted because of COVID. I would, if she feels safe, or maybe going with the landlord, to try to talk some sense into him. I don't know. I mean, the one thing that I have with neighbors, and this is a tough one, and I don't know how receptive they would be, but I never understand when a neighbor has a problem, you know, why they would go to police first. For example, when I had a barking dog, why they would go to police first to deal with it, or my car was parked incorrectly, instead of just talking directly to the neighbor. So maybe I would try, because they can't be kicked out. So I would try that, but I just have so much sympathy for her.
Yeah. Chef?
Oh, this is terrible. I'm sorry, but you just have to move. You have to move. And you know what? Count yourself lucky that's a decision you can make. Because if you live in a house, if you buy a house and your neighbors are terrible, that is a huge, huge expense to move. And, like, good luck. Good luck doing that right now. So
she
I mean,
can't afford to move. And why should she have to move when she's not the problem?
You're going to have to change your situation. Like, suck it up for 3-4 months, whatever it's going to take. Take a loan from friends if needed. Because, look, you say it's destroying your health and your happiness. You got to find a way to get out of there, because they're not going to fix it for you.
I would try first to talk some sense, please.
So you got, so now, granted, this is the OG, okay? I want to preface this. This is the old G. Years ago, I used to do car detailing, and there was a new neighbor that just bought a house next to where I was living. This was about 15 years ago. And I used to bring cars back to, like, some of the cars that I would get from auto dealerships. I would bring them back to the back of my house, and that's where I would detail them. Well, the first thing the lady does, she calls the police. She calls the police on me. And the police comes, and they're asking what they're doing. I said, I'm cleaning cars. Like, well, she says you're running, operating a business back there, and you can't, you know, you're not allowed to do this. I'm like, really? I said, man, you know, I get to the bottom of it. I know how to handle police officers in that situation. Anyways, back, it happened. She called the police again. So now I'm mad. And, of course, police came, and nothing really happened with that. It was the 4th of July. She had a whole bunch of family in the back. And I acted a fool. I decided to cuss her out during her family barbecue. I ruined her family barbecue. The reason why I tell that story is I want to just say this. I don't encourage you. There's nothing that's going to benefit from having bad blood contention with your neighbors.
Right.
Make it right. I should have done the right thing, even gone over to her and talked to her, brought her some milk and cookies or something.
Yes,
do not make
first.
Things back with bad with your neighbors. Coming up next, we do headlines, and hopefully we never have to tell stories about the old me. It's G and Ursula.